Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome back to part two of the French Connections Wednesday edition here on the 15th day of March, 2006. I am very proud to have my guest with me today for her second visit to the French Connection. Every time I've ever heard my guest speak, there's a lot of learning going on, and this is what the French Connection's sole purpose is to teach people new things, how to deal with their world better, how to understand what's happening around them. And what we've decided, and I've asked Jerry Gaudette to do for me today, was to put a presentation together about how people can start a garden of their own. As you know, or may not know, Jerry has non-bio-manipulated seeds available. They're not Frankenstein food, ladies and gentlemen, and it's becoming rarer and more rare every day that you can find seeds that have not been manipulated or purchased or controlled by some patent by the big agribusinesses. And Jerry's business is involved in trying to provide these seeds that we've all had for millions of years on our planet that are now being stolen by these elites. And I want to talk about how to get a garden started. It's springtime. It's a perfect moment for this conversation. And I think it's a very enlightening discussion that we're going to have. Jerry, are you with me?
I am here, Daryl. Nice to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. You know, I told you in a private call that I'm in the process of digging up some dirt, some land, to put a garden together. And I told you also that I knew very little, if anything, about growing a garden for food. And, you know, I have a green thumb. Everything I touch usually flourishes quite well. But this is a very different animal. I found out it's back-breaking.
Oh, yes.
Especially when you don't have much of a back to be breaking.
It doesn't have to be, though, but yes, it could be.
Well, this turning over the soil with a little pitchfork there is one heck of a thing, and I'm not very good at that, and it's tiring. But the other thing is that there are times for proper planting. There are preparations that are needed. There are certain plants that do well for debutantes like myself and others that maybe not so well. There are certain types of plants that maybe attract animals. Where I live, we have wild pigs, actually. And then there are also plants that grow better in smaller environments or up on balconies or limited sun. These are all the kinds of things that I'd like to talk about today with you and about maybe about the bio seeds. Could you give a little background on what non-bio manipulated seeds actually are?
Yes, it's technically called non-GMO. They're not genetically modified organisms. We preserve here at the ARC Institute only non-hybrids. That means they haven't been hybridized and crossed by man, and also non-GMO. They have not been genetically engineered. And they're so important because it gives you the capability of growing from year to year the same plants, the same vegetables that you grew the year before. They breed true, to say it in the language, they breed true. Instead of, for example, planting a hybrid seed and then have some of the generation turn out to be like the parents, some with the hybrid, the non-hybrid characteristics or the originating strains. It's like A plus B gives you AB to get the hybrid. And then when you plant those hybrid seeds, they resegregate again and you can get A, parent A, or parent B, or AB like the originals. Now that's not necessarily, well, it generally isn't a good thing because when they make these crosses, oftentimes they'll take a really bushy tomato, for example, with very tiny, sour, little nugget tomatoes on it, but they like it because it's drought resistant. And then they cross that with something that is pretty mucky, short, but has large tomatoes. Let's just use that very simple example.
Mm-hmm.
Neither tomato is a good tomato, but they cross the two and they come up with a hybrid that they think is quite good. And it has, for example, drought resistance, okay? Maybe that was what was in the second tomato. Well, it might have drought resistance and so on in that combination. However, if you wanted to survive, if you needed to take care of yourself and your family, and you save the seed from that combination, and you replant it, you're going to get the majority of those offspring can be parent A or parent B, which are lousy tomatoes.
Yeah.
And some of them will be the hybrids, but...
Well, can I tell you that I think all tomatoes that you buy in the store today are lousy?
Oh,
they're all
garbage.
They're void of flavor. They just... I think they're breeding for red.
Well, no, it's a very, very astute observation. They're breeding for... Well, first of all, they redden those with ethylene gas. Those aren't natural red. They redden them with a reddening agent, ethylene gas. But more importantly, they're breeding them so that you don't have a soft, tender tomato that ripens too quickly and then spoils and molds in shipping. They are making them hard as rocks. They are picking them before they're ripe. They are, and these are the commercial operations.
They don't have any flavor. And I mean, any of you out there, ladies and gentlemen, who have not tasted a homegrown tomato, boy, have you got a wonderful treat ahead of you.
Oh,
I mean, they're a fruit, actually. They're not even classified as a vegetable. They're a fruit. And they are absolutely just beyond anything you've ever put in your mouth. And today, you can't find them anywhere.
Yes, it's like the difference between tasting water and fine French wine.
Well, I want to bring something up because I just stumbled on this. Actually, tomatoes are classified as a fruit, aren't they?
Well, yes, technically in biology.
Right, but didn't Ronald Reagan reclassify them as ketchup?
Vegetable for the diet. In reality, tomatoes have all of the fruiting parts of a plant, even vegetables. They're technically called fruits. It's the fruit or the baby of the plant. And so that's a technical term. But, yes, tomatoes, Ronald Reagan reclassified ketchup as a vegetable so that the government didn't have to fund so much money to the school lunch programs in order to provide some vegetables to children who don't get vegetables at home because of poverty.
Well, we know, I want to bring this part of it up too, yes. Jerry, because you're so good with this stuff. What they've got growing today, we've got perfect-looking vegetables, but in many cases, these things are void of quality. I mean, our soils in many instances have become mineral void. They're sterilized soils. Now, of course, we get a perfect-looking pepper, but there's no selenium in there. There's no magnesium in there. There are no trace elements in there that are really important to our diet. And what we've got is just something that looks good that's not very good for you.
I can do. I could probably do 3 hours on soil structure and the interface between the root hairs and the soil and what this does to the nutrient of the vegetables and fruits that you grow in that soil. I can tell you, if I were to just summarize it, when the pioneers came across America back in the 1800s, they found in some areas topsoil that they claimed was 12 feet deep. Now, I can tell you that it takes approximately 1,000 years to form a foot of topsoil, of native topsoil. Now, we have managed since the so-called Green Revolution that started in the 50s, we have managed to get rid of most of that topsoil.
Yeah.
We have, because of chemical agriculture, putting nothing but just nutrients, pure nutrients on the soil, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, on the soil, and not returning to the soil that humus. We have destroyed our topsoil. Now, having said that, there is an effort on, has been now for a number of years, to return stubble, corn stubble and things like that, back to the soil to try to retain the topsoil and build it back up again, although we're depleting it as fast as we're managing.
Well, don't these high concentrations of phosphates and nitrogens kill a lot of the natural bacteria that are supposed to be present?
Absolutely. Chemical agriculture really does kill a lot of those organisms.
Yeah.
I like to use the phrase, soil is not dirt. Soil is a living thing. It has billions upon billions of natural bacteria, fungi, mycorrhizae, a special kind of organism that actually can grow up into the roots of a plant. It's a fungal type organism. It grows up into the roots of a plant and then can grow as far away in mats as blocks and blocks away. Some claim that mycorrhizae, same DNA has been found a half a mile away from the plant it's feeding. So where the roots don't stretch out themselves that far, that deep, perhaps with the exception of grapes, the mycorrhizae extend the gathering area, if you will, or the feeding area of a plant for great distances. So these are very important organisms, and therefore we can't willy-nilly chemically kill the soil, which we have been doing now for so many years, because the mycorrhizae also are dying, and it makes it impossible for plants to bring in these nutrients from great distances and varied nutrients that feed these plants.
Well, you know, what I do know is many people out there who do own homes, or if their children want to start a garden or whatever, these yards, many people's yards have very good soil. I mean, they haven't been depleted. They've, you know, they when they mow their grass, most people allow a lot of the grass to be mulched back in. And so basically, if they were to start a garden in their backyard, oftentimes they've got a very quality topsoil. They haven't had these intensive farming practices placed on this soil. Am I right?
If this is undisturbed soil and hasn't been farmed commercially in many years, likely you have a very usable soil. And the more humus you find on top, the more topsoil you have, the more friable it is. A good test is to dig up the soil, pulverize it, pick it up in your hand and squeeze it. If it has a fair amount of moisture in it, it'll form a ball. And then when you open your hand, that should fall apart if it has a lot of organic matter in it. If it forms a ball of clay, for example, then you have a whole lot of clay in that soil. And even though that soil hasn't been used for a very long time, you're going to have to amend it some to break up some of those very fine plate-like, very tiny, tiny clay particles that will prevent roots from really getting through them.
And that's important. So that would be an aeration technique using different bags of different of some.
Well, you can add sand, for example,
mm-hmm.
or you can use the wall board that you put up in your house. That can be pulverized and broken down, and you could put that gypsum back into clay soils, and that will help to break clay up very well. I had to laugh to go by somebody's house one time in town where somebody had literally taken wallboard down out of his house, and he had chopped it up into pieces no smaller than 12 inches to 2 feet, and he tried burying that in his garden, and it was the absolute ugliest garden I ever saw in my life, with gigantic pieces of drywall sticking up out of his garden, and it wasn't doing very much for the clay in between. But if you don't have access to large quantities of sand, for example, which can help you to break up clay, and large quantities of humus when you're first starting out, or rotted sawdust is good that you
mm-hmm.
put into clay. But gypsum actually does a little chemical interaction there, and it's a natural product, and you can put that in, and you can help break clay up. The other thing I wanted to say about your back and digging your things, there are other ways to do this. You can use mechanical help in the form of something like a rototiller, a rear-end tined tiller, to do that work for you. You can rent these things, but don't expect to get down 8 to 12 inches on one pass. You'll have to do an inch or two or three at a time, depending on how hard the soil is, and so you'll make lots of walks back and forth. And the larger the rototiller, the better, because otherwise you're going to jerk your back out anyway using the rototiller.
Just getting it in and out of the vehicle that you drove it there with to hurt your back.
Well, now, I have to tell you that I am over 50, and I have been gardening for some 35 years, and I use a Mantis tiller. Those are the ones that have like saw blade tillers on the bottom, and I'm not promoting anybody here. I'm telling you what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing literally will cut through better than some of those big expensive tillers. That thing will break up vegetation on the top and then go down inch at a time. And I have never, it uses next to no gasoline. It's unbelievable. You put a little oil in it with the gasoline. What do you call it?
Two-cycle oil.
Cycle oil, yes. In with the gasoline. And I can tell you, I can rototill with that thing for, I guess, an hour and a half or so on one single little tiny tank. The thing weighs 20 pounds. And wow. Oh gosh, yes. And you can dig holes for your trees with it. You can do everything with it. I'm just so impressed with this little machine. But here I am doing, I don't sell mantises. I'm just telling you what this girl does,
Well, you know what I've been doing, Jerry? I've been actually digging it with a pitchfork there. Yes. Not with a pitchfork.
That's
it's not
the way I've done it for years.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I get down about 8-10 inches with mine and turn over nice big lumps and it all crumbles apart when I turn it.
Oh, you've got nice soil.
Oh, yeah, and it's black. And it's black and crumbly. And it smells. When you lift one a big load out, you can smell the dirt hit you in the face.
Oh, that's beautiful, Daryl. And when you turn it, don't turn it completely upside down, but turn it over on its side so you get the profile of everything sideways instead of inverting the soil, because you want if your topsoil is in very, very, very deep, you definitely don't want to put your clay up top and your topsoil underneath. You want to have your topsoil available up top to plant seeds directly into it. And so, especially for people with thin topsoil and clay underneath, don't invert that pitchfork completely upside down. Now, if you have heavy vegetation on top, this is something you can do, too, in getting these beds prepared early, and that is if you don't have some yourself around, you can go to a carpet company, for example, and see if they have a carpet that they've removed out of people's houses, and take that and put the burlap side down and wall-to-wall carpet your patch that you want to kill the grass and vegetation
mm-hmm.
on. And then you can pull that off afterwards when everything is dead, and you can then begin your soil prep that way. Or you can use black plastic. That
yep.
will work, too, to hide it. Or you can use thick mulches like straw. You don't want hay because it has grass seed in. It has hay seeds in. You want straw, and you want that straw not to be salted because sometimes they salt it to keep it.
Ah.
Yes.
Ah, that's so that it doesn't start mildewing.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. So you definitely don't want salt in the straw. You want plain wheat. I use wheat straw.
Yep.
And what you can do then is, and here's another labor-saving thing, choose at the outset whether you're going to be planting in rows or beds. My recommendation would be to work in beds because then you have the most efficient use of your space. You only have to rototill the bed width that you want, and you can leave the paths untilled or unturned. You can leave those in their native state as long as you keep the weeds down between them. And that'll save you time the first year getting started. So
I'm doing exactly that. And I came up with this just by watching gardening shows over my life. And I knew this bedding principle.
Yes.
And I remember someone doing it. And it seemed, and when you clean up those little walk areas with the grass on them, it stays nice. And
yes.
you can kneel down beside your patch, your bed, and so we know that the preparation of the soil is really, this is like building a house. You have to have a foundation, and for everybody out there, the foundation of a soil is its nutrients. And now, are there some areas of the country that are going to need humus to be brought into to their gardens?
Well, any sandy soil, any real heavy duty sand, like for example, areas of Florida, they're built on sand. You get sinkholes in those areas, or in the desert southwest, for example. There are people who like to garden out in New Mexico, Arizona, and so on, and you can have exceedingly sandy soils there. Now, those folks, their challenge is not only the intense heat and sunlight that you have to use shade cloth and other kinds of strategies to battle, but you'd also want to add great quantities of humus to the soil. And that humus can be in the form of many things. You can run a compost heap that you can use all kinds of things in, grass clippings, leaf mold. And having said leaves, let me tell you, absolutely never, ever, ever use any part of walnuts, walnut trees, walnut leaves, walnuts themselves, no walnut backs, because they secrete a chemical. There is a chemical throughout the whole plant called jugulone, which is made by nature to combat all other plants. It's called allelopathy, all other plants in its vicinity, in order to ensure the survival of the walnut tree. I guess it's God's opinion that walnuts should live.
Did you know that walnuts attract flies as well?
No, I didn't know that.
I have a walnut tree. I cut it down because it was infested with flies, and it oozed this sappy stuff, and the tree was absolutely abuzz with big horse flies, big black.
Yeah, that must be a regular pest of walnut trees, and I'm not familiar with it, especially over there in France. I have no idea what kind of pest that would be, but I certainly could find out.
Well, I cut the boogers down. This thing was just a real nightmare for me, and I would walk by it and hear the buzzing, and I said, what the heck is this? But, I want to go on to this next thing. I mean, we're coming up on the start of the season, because for some people, especially in the central areas of the country, or even on the central Atlantic or West Coast, the season for beginning your first planting is right around now, in the next few weeks. What items do we start out with in a spring garden that is still getting subjected to some very cold nights?
Okay. First of all, the first thing you want to do is you want to make sure that you're planting your hot season plants right now in the house. Plant your seeds. Get them started, because you're going to be wanting to have those come the end of your frost period. And so get those started first, and then you can plant, for example, in most areas of the country, you can plant peas, snap peas, regular green peas, all of that good stuff. You can plant them right now outdoors. As a matter of fact, in the warmer areas of the country, you're almost past your first pea season, because, they like to grow in cool weather. The other thing you can grow right now outdoors in many parts of the country are the coal, C-O-L-E, crops. That includes broccoli, cabbage, for example, all different kinds of broccolis and cabbage. Also cauliflowers you can grow, and cauliflowers are kind of touchier. They like a little bit warmer, but, again, you can grow them really pretty quick here. Best to go out in areas of the country that are going to get hot later. Best that those go out as plants.
How about our root vegetables like potatoes? Can those go in yet?
Yes, potatoes can go in the ground. Carrots can be planted, beets.
How about if your potatoes didn't get treated with an anti-sprouting thing and you're getting roots on them? Can you cut them in half and stick them in the ground and they grow?
Right. Here's the key to using grocery store potatoes. One, examine the potato carefully and see that it has no scab or no soft spots, nothing that looks like a disease. Best, if you can find them, get certified potatoes, certified disease-free potatoes, virus-free, fungus-free, the whole bit. But many of us can't where we live, and therefore you can get them from the grocery store. Look for the ones that are sprouting. Those baby reds are often new potatoes, and it will be a long, long time in the sun before those things ever sprout, if they sprout at all. And some of the others, as you indicated, have been sprayed to prevent sprouting. Eventually, they usually sprout, but it's too long. Look for ones that already have eyes bulging on them that are absolutely perfect on the outside. And here's another big key. If you will look for the tiniest ones in the bin, the smallest ones available in the bag, those mature yet small potatoes can be planted whole, and then you don't have to worry about cutting them up and having fungal diseases on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to use large ones and cut them up so you have one or two eyes per piece, then you have two choices. You can go the chemical route, which I don't do. That will definitely keep fungus from growing on the surface, and then you just plant them. Or you can cut those pieces and put them in a sunny window inside the house, keeping them dry, and let them naturally callus. Then you can plant them in warmish soil so that they get a good head start and do fine. But my personal preference after 35 years of doing this is to seek potatoes that are small in size. I always, even if I look to buy certified potato stock, I go through their bag and look for the tiniest ones in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones you can plant whole, and then your chances of success are increased because you don't have the open wound for a fungus to attack.
Same with onions. I've got onions, I have them. They sell them like little marbles in a bag.
Uh-huh.
Now, you have to be careful on which side you put up, don't you?
Oh, yes. The little point, the little neck of the onion is what's up. The flat, broader end, or in case yours is a bullet-shaped or football-shaped, the one with the little nubby root is the bottom part.
And you have to hold, pinch it between your fingers and make sure you're setting that into the ground heading up, right?
Yes, heading up so that the dry little neck is facing up and the root is facing down, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, it's a good time for onions. Yes, right now it's a great time for onions. The other thing is endive, or endive in U.S. American pronunciation, or the other name for it is escarole, or Royal Batavian endive is another name for it. That is a really great wintertime lettuce, if you will. If you have hard freezes, it will finally die, but the thing can take temperatures down to about 20 degrees, and that's when it really sweetens up on the inside. I have in various parts of the country, including when I lived in Vail, Colorado, believe it or not, where we had horrible winters, I have had lettuce, if you will, green, fresh greens all winter long using a little cold frame over these Royal Batavian endive plants. You can take just the white hearts or the light green hearts, you can pull them into the house, and you can dip with them into dressings and so on. It's absolutely spectacular.
Endive with vinaigrette is absolutely out of this world. I eat endive. That's a big French food over here. We eat a lot of endive, and it's really delicious.
Endive is fantastic, and I use it as a with my half of my family was Italian, and we cooked it down with garlic, hot pepper flakes, and some beans in a frying pan, and just sauteed it down. It takes a whole maybe 4 minutes to cook, maybe 5 minutes at the outside, and you've got a meal that will be so healthy.
You know, it's interesting because my wife and I, we've gotten rid of our microwave because it kills vitamins. We started looking for good ways of getting vitamin content into our diets because this is really the challenge for to be healthy is to have good vitamins in your food.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get vitamins into your system with pills is kind of like trying to breathe through a straw.
Well, it's not the best
way to do it.
Right. We do find that the best profiles of plant chemicals is in the whole food,
mm-hmm.
and not in the isolated vitamins and minerals. But something about microwave. Microwaves kill some vitamins in food, but they are not the same vitamins that are killed by boiling. And then, again, boiling is not the same vitamins killed as baking. And so, in reality, all three types of food preparation, including dehydration, all of them, you lose some nutrients in the process. But they're not the same for each one of them. So I would not be afraid of microwave, per se, being a particular nutrient killer. For example, I think the last I read was in broccoli, some of the B vitamins were destroyed by microwave, whatever. However, it retained so much more of the nutrient profile than boiling did, for example. So everything kind of balances out. If you're using high vitamin-rich vegetables to begin with, and you eat it in a variety of ways, quick stir-fry, or microwave sometimes, or steamed sometimes, or frozen, or fresh, raw. Fresh, raw, of course, is probably the best way to get most, but garlic releases many more things when you cook it that are good for you than when you eat it raw.
Mm.
And so, you see, everything balances out. The whole secret is variety and eating things as natural as possible.
Well, we have to put a caution on the garlic. I only eat it with mixed company.
yes.
Never eat garlic alone.
And
you know, I got a question for you about some of the plants that are difficult to grow, because there are some very sensitive ones. My wife and I wanted to grow strawberries. And they are beset they're a great host for bugs.
Yes.
And in fact, what can happen often is if you put the wrong types of items together, they can actually attract bugs and destroy your other plants, can't they?
Any flowering plant can, and yes, any plant can do that. The idea is always to mix your varieties of plants in the garden so that the insects buzzing by get mixed chemical signals, and you're not growing monocultures of anything.
Yeah.
And that's what you do when you do strawberry beds. You often have monocultures. But having said that, strawberries are tough in that they do spread around and they go through the garden. I have grown strawberries between tomato plants. They do need sun, though, so you can't really shade them too much. But I've grown them in rock gardens and sides of hills and in pots. And I've even grown strawberries in the bathroom with a skylight. I love strawberries so much. I mean, you grow them everywhere. But get floating row covers, you know, that Remay-type fabric, and put it over your strawberry bed if insects coming in are a major problem in your area. And that will help with the insects. The other thing is fungus. You want to keep them weeded out and divide them, weed out all of the runners and so on, or the old mother plants on a yearly basis so that they have lots of air, because you can get red steel disease and a lot of fungal diseases that will go through the bed and cause you problems.
Well, now, we've got other problems, a problem plant. So one of the ones that I know that requires quite a bit of water is corn.
Yes.
Now, corn's a wonderful plant, but these bio people in the world have spread their pollen everywhere. And, in fact, even if you're not using, you know, non-Frankenstein seeds, their stuff's in the wind often. And
it is.
And even over here in France, they don't have Frankenstein food here yet, but they were testing it, and it was big articles saying that the pollen from these testing plants had found their way out into the wind and poisoned many farmers. Corn crops, and but the fact is, corn can be a wonderful crop, because corn on the cob, sweet corn, is wonderful. But it's labor intensive and heavy on water, isn't it?
Oh, exceedingly so, and it's also very heavy on nutrients. If you're going to grow corn, it's very important that you put a lot of nutrients back into the soil in the form of nitrogenous nutrients. Now, we used to use a lot of manure on corn fields, and in as much as you can do that, I am very leery about recommending that to people anymore, because there is so much dangerous E. coli in manures, especially cow manure. They have a lot of dangerous E. coli, and in chicken manure, unfortunately, we now have the huge potential of having bird flu in it, and also salmonella and Campylobacter jejuni. All of these are very dangerous. If you know how to compost at high temperatures, and you wear a mask, and you wear goggles, and you wear gloves, and you take off your clothes immediately, and you wash those clothes in very hot water with lots of soap in it and so on, then you can potentially safely use manure.
This isn't as much fun as it used to be, in other words.
It's not as easy as it used to be. As a matter of fact, my favorite, absolutely downright favorite.
Well, we go out into the yard over here and grab some horse turtles.
Yes.
And we grab a couple of horse turtles and toss them in the garden, and
yes.
It seems...
Well, let me tell you a funny story about horse turtles. My husband used to eat our peas right out of the garden, and he was eating, you know, the edible potted peas, and we used to fertilize with horse manure, and he ended up with amoebic dysentery.
Ooh.
It was from the horse manure. He was ill for 10 months.
Oh.
For 10 months. You should not eat out of your garden directly.
Yeah.
Don't pick up a tomato even and eat directly out of your garden anymore, because it's blowing in the wind, as Peter, Paul, and Mary would say. You've got lots of manure dust in the wind in agrarian areas, even in backyard areas where people are really into gardening. This blows in the wind, and, you know, and prime example is unpasteurized apple juices, where it killed how many babies here and children in the United States a few years ago. It was because of hemorrhagic E. coli, and these kids hadn't eaten anything particular other than apple juice. Well, where did it come from? It came from apples. The apples weren't fertilized up in the tree by manure. It was blowing in the wind from local farms.
Well, you know, one of the things that everybody needs is and it's the least common of all our senses, it's common sense. And, of course, you don't take anything out from your garden without washing it. But I recommend that if you buy something from your grocery store, you make sure you wash it very well. Oh. So many people just think it's, you know, cut it up and toss it in the pot. And very dangerous. Not only do they use heavy chemicals, but many of these foods, such as cucumbers, are covered with a wax that can actually get chemicals embedded into the wax. And if you don't scrub them well, you're still going
to
get these trace pesticides.
You have to peel the wax ones. I wouldn't eat those for anything.
No.
There's just no way that I don't even buy cucumbers out of season. That's another thing, Daryl, to stay healthy. Don't eat things out of season. They don't come from areas of the world then that use manure-laden water and so on to do it. I mean, I have a friend who just last week got food poisoning, ended up in the hospital, and she had eaten a mango. Well, you peel mangoes. She washed the mango first. Apparently, she didn't wash it well enough. I am in the habit now of using, if I do buy an apple, for example, a commercial apple, I will literally use dish detergent, regular dish detergent, and warm water, and soak that thing up 2 to 3 times if I'm going to use a skin for anything. Most of the time I peel them, and I take all those beautiful antioxidants away when I peel it, but I don't trust it. I know it's in that skin because it is chemically produced.
And they're actually waxing apples as well, aren't they, dipping them?
Some are putting a wax on them, yes, a polish kind of. I've seen them. As a matter of fact, I've called a grocery store man over before and asked them, why are those apples so shiny? That is not a natural apple. Oh, well, that's the wax, the polish they put on them.
Yeah.
I said, thank you, but no thank you. Because this stuff doesn't just sit on the surface. It goes into the skin. And I can tell you, I was doing a doctorate in genetic engineering and molecular biology. And I can tell you that among all of the faculty that I worked with in the research laboratory, we all peeled our vegetables. None of us ate the skin.
Well, we can eat our skins from our own gardens if we wash them well.
If you wash them well.
Because we know that if you bring them in and scrub them up and clean them up, you know where it came from, especially if you're not using any pesticides. And are there any natural pesticides that you can, like, in other words, some plants that you
can... I can tell you a great resource, and I'm not going to I know what it is. Go to our website.
Yeah.
The ARK Institute's website. It's ARK Institute. ARKinstitute.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. I have a link there. My favorite place to buy all organic pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, the whole thing. All natural. All organic. That is the place. It's Gardens Alive, and it's down there at the bottom of my homepage.
Well, you know what we do over here in France in my area, because we have the wild pigs and we have the deer.
Yeah.
We actually pee in a bottle and pour it around the garden, and the animals are repelled by that, and they don't come near the garden.
That's right. It's very high in nitrogen, too. And it's very good to add nitrogen to your soil. And there's some men have an advantage there, but it's pretty done by women, too.
Well, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but it actually works, and they don't like it. Now, the only one that doesn't seem to think that's a problem is the rabbits.
Yes.
Now, many people everywhere are going to be plagued by rabbits, and I recommend people, if they've got an outdoor garden, to get chicken wire at least around the base of their garden, and don't put it down to the ground level, but bend it over a little bit so that
it's... On the rabbit side.
On the rabbit side.
Right. Bend it over so that the rabbit, in digging, will get his little paws caught in the wire, and he'll give up, hopefully. And so will the raccoons, although they're a little tougher. Don't even talk about raccoons.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this is bringing people back to where we should have never left.
Right.
And sadly, what's one of the goals of the French Connection is to bring people together. You know, Jerry, I'm talking a lot about bringing young people to old people. Our knowledge of old people is often not transferred to the youth today because our society tells us that you're not supposed to talk to the generation before or after you. And that's, they're getting this kind of message from our mass media. And I'm trying to break down that barrier and say, look, you know, we are all part of the same family, and we need to be communicating our knowledge to our kids and to their, and so these kinds of things, because they're kind of lost in our culture, we have to re-educate our culture that wonderful foods are available. We can do these things for ourselves. And when you do, there's a wonderful satisfaction coming from this. I mean, I got to tell you something. When I grow plants, I've got a hugely green thumb. I mean, I just touch it, it grows green. And it brings me joy. I mean, there's a wonderful warmth about doing this that everybody needs to experience.
And it's actually, Daryl, I do believe, because I've experienced that warm feeling for 35 years, I do believe it is a spiritual connection. There's a spiritual connection. Our bodies and spirits were meant to be connected to the land and elsewhere. I do think that when you're working hand in hand, or should we say on your knees, hand in dirt,
yep,
with the soil and feeding yourself, you will suddenly begin to realize you, your soul, your heart, everything is way more at peace than you were before. And I think everybody should be on their knees gardening and trying this, no matter what your age. You know, old Ruth Stout, who died at something like 97 years old, used to garden with deep mulches, you know, straw, again, not hay. And she used to just plant in between, well, first plant them and then add more and more and more mulch. Kept the insects down terrific, and it kept her work down. So even at 97, she was still out in her garden. And I hope to be that same kind of old woman one day, out there in my garden, and when I die, please put me in the compost heap and put me back in the soil where I belong.
Well, you know, these are real experiences, and you know something, Jerry?
Yes.
I want to invite you back in maybe a month or two. And to talk about gardening again, and about how these things are happening, and possibly about the developments on some of these other news items. But you know, today's information was really I wanted to earmark this to people, because this is the time to consider putting a garden in.
Absolutely.
And you're not too late. And this is why I think it's important. It's still March. You can still, anywhere you are in the country, even here in Europe, you can still consider putting a garden in. It's not too late. In fact, it's never too late to put a garden in, as long as you've got growing season left.
Right.
There's always something you can put in the ground that'll grow.
Oh, absolutely.
So this is important, and the Arc Institute, because it is forwarding so many of the traditional ideas about farming and battling against this corporatism and this destruction of our right as human beings to our foods.
Mm-hmm.
This is an important battle that we're fighting. There is political reasoning behind this interview as well, because look, they have tried to kill us with so many things, and this is just one more example, ladies and gentlemen, where they're trying to sterilize the quality of our food, take the right from us to produce it for ourselves. And by participating in growing your own food without bio-mangled Frankenstein things, you're actually fighting back against this very evil group of controllers who are taking over our world, basically. They want our food supply to be in their hands, don't they, Jerry?
Well, certainly it appears that way, Daryl. They've got the Terminator now is being pushed right now, as a matter of fact. Is it this month or April? April. In Brazil, they're going to try to get the Terminator through. In Europe, elsewhere, and everywhere, the Terminator will terminate the lives of seeds, so that you cannot plant the seed afterwards, and you will be dependent on them, on corporations, multinational corporations, to get seed in order to grow your own food, if you even have the ability to do it. And you will be dependent, farmers, everybody will be dependent on a handful of companies for seed once that Terminator's in place. And unfortunately, I mean, the UN has, there's been a moratorium on it, de facto moratorium, and that has been lifted. They are trying very hard. The UN's fighting it. Everyone's fighting it. Who has a brain, who has a soul, they're fighting it, because people, the people who depend on it for self-reliance are going to be devoid of their own seeds, and it has taken eons of generations upon generations to adapt these seeds and to raise seeds that their parents and grandparents and great-great parents handed down to them. This is unconscionable. On our website, Darryl, again, we're like a Noah's Ark, the seeds, it's arkinstitute.com.
Yep.
You can find information on this under the food supply updates. It is critical people understand that unless they get non-hybrid, non-GMO seeds, they can lose their ability to grow their own food and feed themselves. And in these times, Darryl, that is a very dangerous proposition.
Well, you want to learn a little bit more about the fight against it, especially here in Europe, ladies and gentlemen. Why don't you look into a guy named Josie Beauvais? Josie has gone out into these fields and cut up these experimental farms, and he's fighting on the front lines. I worry about him being bought off. I'm a little concerned about him lately, but still, some of the organizations that you'll find when you look into this man that have sprung up around his efforts to stop them from doing this are very important, because you need to lend your support to this as well. This is our right as a human being, and our family as human beings. We should demand that this right never be abridged or taken from us. And so I got to tell you something. You know, the joy of growing things and eating from your own garden cannot be described here on this radio show. It has to be experienced. And I want to urge every single one of you out there to consider this as not only as a source of wonderful feelings for yourself, but as a way to help your family's health and continue the fight against being controlled by these. Well, I'm going to call them what they are in my book. They're monsters, and we've got to stop them. It's greed that they want. It's control that they want. And, boy, I don't want them controlling me, and I don't want to contribute to their efforts at controlling our world. So, again, this has been a wonderful interview. We didn't touch on everything. I want to let everybody know that there is so much more information at Jerry's site. There are books available. There are the seeds, of course, that she provides. But this is just a really tip of the iceberg kind of interview. Just want to give everybody a feeling for this subject and an idea that they can be a part of their own futures by doing this. What do you say to that, Jerry?
Well, I think you probably have summarized it quite well, Darryl. And frankly, we are at a crossroads right now in terms of potential catastrophes here on the Earth, from nuclear to the bird flu, which is our most imminent, most dangerous threat right now. We're worried about global food supply. The agricultural system will come down if this occurs. And it's very, very important for people to realize that they need to have the ability and retain the ability to feed themselves in those kinds of situations. Life
That's
depends
right.
on it.
That's right, it does. And to my young, and you know, you don't know this, but we're trying to grow young people in listening to our information.
Right.
And we've got more and more 17, 18, and 19 and 20 year olds, even younger and some older. But we're trying to make a bridge here, Jerry, to this younger generation, and explain to them these forces that are at work on our planet and what it is they want to do to us. And it's horrendous, the things that they've really in documentation have enunciated for our futures. And I got to tell you, if everybody was aware of what I'm aware of, they would take this as a very urgent condition.
Well, I think there are things at work right now that threaten global food security. If we just focused on food, and right now, folks really should consider what they're going to do to take care of themselves. Don't forget, this is the way of nature, the way of God, is to be able to take care of yourself and your family.
Yeah.
When that is threatened, when the whole natural order of things is threatened by something like the Terminator technology that stops a seeding plant from producing seed that can be grown again for next year, that is an interruption in the scheme of life that threatens life on the planet per se.
And it's also a Pandora's box that cannot be reclosed, isn't it?
That's the sad part, is because you cannot be arrogant enough as a human being to think that you're going to be able to control this. The pollen blows in the wind. It spreads everywhere. We have this stuff out of control already in various parts of the world. That is the simple bottom line fact, and that's what they don't want you to know. And I have read some more recent data data just coming out that I have to get posted on our website. I will get to that over the next couple of weeks, but we have evidence of yet more escapes into the environment. Daryl, before I forget, there are many people, I always get this criticism, and that is many people don't have computers, and I always give a website. So I want to be sure for those people without computers that they have a way of reaching us here, and that's at 1-800-255-1912, 1-800-255-1912. This way we can send you in print materials if you don't have a computer, and Kristen will get those out to you.
Well, not only that, I've already offered you in the past, if some of your sources for these quality seeds ever dry up, we still, to the moment, are only using natural seeds over here. So I'll tell you, I'll get them in the mail to you in a New York second if you run low. So there'll never be a shortage of non-Frankenstein stuff, okay?
Will do, Daryl. We'll network around the world. I love it.
You betcha. You know, this is a global thing. We're a single family, ladies and gentlemen. We're all part of the same family, and we have a responsibility to approach this as a family fighting against forces of greed, and that's really what the bottom line is. I want to thank you, Jerry, for coming on today. I know you stayed a little longer than you had planned, but it was great radio we did today.
Well, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope we've done some good today.
Well, I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks again.
All righty. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jerry Godetti, ARC Institute, microbiologist, expert on these food issues that we've discussed. Also, you'll find so many more interesting things to read on her website. You can get her information from the French Connection website later on. She's going to provide Eric and myself the support information that we're going to post on the site. So please make sure that you check out Jerry's stuff and to try this out for yourselves. I mean, look, we're just a bunch of breathing creatures here. Let's have the best life we can have. Eric has said it so many times. What kind of world could we have if we didn't have to put up with these horrible people? Well, the first step into not having to put up with them is to start being self-sufficient in your food and in many other areas of your life. And you're going to be surprised just how wonderful it is to grow a garden and do this yourself. I mean this. I'm not some kind of, you know, squarrow weird guy. I mean, I'm as quirky as anybody you've ever known. But boy, I'll tell you something. There's something wonderful about a garden, and you should all experience it. Until the next French Connection, which will be tomorrow, I hope. This is Daryl Bradford Smith. Have a great day, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye bye.